Hello, my name is Andrea Calori. I'm a program manager at Berkshire Grown, a nonprofit located in the Berkshires with the mission to support and promote local agriculture as a vital part of our region's community, economy, and landscape. This podcast series is an opportunity for farmers to hear from other farmers about what they are doing in the region and how they're doing it. And it's also just a great way to share stories and learn from each other. Today, I'm really excited to be speaking with Laura Tupper-Palchas and Megan Bantle of Fullwell Farm, which is located in Adams, Massachusetts in the Northern Berkshires. Welcome, Megan and Laura.
Thanks, Andrea.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for being here. Would you both introduce yourselves and introduce the farm?
Sure. So my name is Meg. I grew up in Adams on this land, which used to be my grandparents' dairy farm. And Laura and I met, oh gosh, 6 years ago now, managing at a farm in Sunderland, and founded Fullwell Farm together and had our first season last year and are slowly converting what used to be a hay field into no-till permanent beds for vegetables and cut flowers.
Yes, and I'm Laura, and I've been living in this area for more than 10 years now. I'm from the Cape originally, and I'm really eager to have had the opportunity to come farm at Meg's family land. And I come from a cranberry growing household, so I have a little bit of farming in my my family history, but vegetables are and cut flowers especially are a new endeavor.
Great. Can you just say a little bit about the philosophy of Fullwell Farm in terms of your farming practices?
Sure. Yeah. So we do no-till farming here, which means that we have a permanent bed system. We don't have a tractor. And so right now, this year, we're on almost half an acre. Last year, we did a quarter acre to start with. And basically, with the no-till, it's great for the soil, which creates healthy vegetables. And it's also a good thing for the environment around us. It sequesters carbon. It helps with resilience to climate change. Like the soil structure that's created by no-till maintains moisture very well. So, and being two people, it's really important to have efficient systems. And so with the permanent beds, we're able to set them up once and then just keep working on the same bed. So all of our efforts are building on the same space, and just will get easier over time.
What would you say, you know, you mentioned that the farm was once a part of a dairy farm. Have there been any challenges in converting pasture or hay field to a site that's growing vegetables?
We're both laughing to ourselves because, you know, no-till was also something that we were both sort of new to coming into owning our own business. And so the first season we started, we weren't here in advance. We just kind of arrived in the spring. And so we had this really arduous process of like literally removing the grass and the hay from the bed space by forking it out by hand, which as you can imagine is very backbreaking. and so what we've learned since then from other no-till farmers locally and nationally, via like social media, is that there are other techniques. So this year, prepping for this season, we used silage tarps to try and kill the grass before making the beds. And we're still kind of honing in that practice, and but it definitely made a big difference this year in helping us to expand because we didn't have the same kind of slow and long process of removing the weeds. So yeah, all the more reason why podcasts like this are great, because maybe someone out there doesn't know about Silas Charms and how great they can be.
What, you know, just thinking about your first growing season and now your second growing season, you know, that's obviously something that you've learned since your first season and going into your second one. What are some of the other things that you both have, you know, when planning for this year, thought back to your first year and thought, okay, we need to do something different, or these are the things we're going to keep the same, especially since you've expanded your acreage as well?
Gosh, so many things. I think a big part of it, a big change for us, is that we have irrigation this year. Last year, we didn't have access to water, so we were bringing it in like a 300-gallon tank whenever we needed it.
Oh, wow.
Which is very time-consuming. Yeah. And, you know, we weren't able to actually irrigate as we needed to. And so that's a big adjustment this year. We had gotten a grant from NRCS to put in a well and get irrigation. And it's been just amazing. So, well, I guess since it's like our first year with that we're going to have a learning curve throughout this season. But in terms of planning, just, you know, I used to be a harvest manager, like when I was at the kitchen garden, and it gave me a good sense of like how much to get out of a bed. But then without irrigation, you don't get the same crop yields out of a bed. And so this year we're like able to irrigate, and we'll be able to get our numbers more consistent, which will help us plan for the future.
Yeah, I also think we learned some of the benefits of being a no tractor farm are that it allows us to kind of experiment with
interplanting.
Yeah, so we aren't kind of beholden to the spacing that a tractor allows for, which allows us to like plant into a bed really quickly. So, you know, for instance, today we're transitioning a bed of spinach into a bed of basil, and we're able to do that like as soon as like, oh, we've harvested the spinach yesterday, and now today we can take it out and put basil in, and we don't have to wait, you know, for the parts of it that would have to, you know, be ready for a tractor. And last year we were experimenting with different interplanting. So we plant our scallions in the same bed as our head lettuce. And we are learning more about how that is, you know, how to time it correctly so that they both come out at the same time. And so, you know, we picked some of those up again from other farms and also just from trying things last year. So this year we definitely took some of that forward and planned on using our space, you know, to the maximum efficiency, which, as Laura mentioned, is really important to us as a small crew.
Of two.
Yeah.
But you do have volunteers that come out every so often, is that right?
Yes, we do.
And what's that like? Like, how did you, you know, I think that's an interesting model that other farms potentially could explore, just having folks, you know, who want to come out on the farm or learn to have volunteers come and facilitate with some of the labor.
Yeah, well, a lot of our volunteers so far have been friends. And this spring in particular, with some folks, you know, out of work with COVID, we've had some really generous friends who want to come out and volunteer their time. But we're also working on expanding that to include like work share models for CSA members in the future who might be able to like volunteer time in exchange for some cost savings. So yeah, I mean, we love having people on the farm, and I think part of our philosophy is definitely not only food access, but access to the land and us as resources. So we are hoping to continue to figure out ways to get as many people around as possible. And then, yeah, in terms of, I mean, obviously that helps us out also, but it feels just like one of the resources we have is, you know, our knowledge and our the land that we have access to. So trying to share that with other people feels really important to us.
Yeah, I also was just thinking how, you know, your farm is in Adams, which, you know, Adams and a lot of Northern Berkshire County was had quite a few dairy farms in the past that are really no longer operating. And so it's interesting to me that you're farming in this community that for a while has lost an aspect of its agricultural practice, but now bringing it back. What is it like to be farming in Adams?
I mean, for me, it's really special, obviously. I'm a sixth generation farmer, the family started in Savoy and came down here a few generations ago. So I have meaningful moments every day where I am able to like think back to my time as a kid here and my grandfather's and my grandmother's dairy business. So, you know, personally, I have a lot of connection to this place. And I think the philosophy that I learned from my grandfather was one of land stewardship. So that is something that I definitely carry forward and is part of the reason that we have the philosophies we do in terms of, you know, being no-till and investing in the soil and not just in the crops that we're getting out of it. Because I think when I think back to what really mattered to my grandfather, it was that this land would be able to be farmland for generations. That's why he signed the land into APR in the 70s. And I really carry that with me when, you know, we decided what kind of business we wanted to run. Like, I'm hoping that these beds that we're growing on now will be beds that could grow vegetables for generations. And that's how we treat the soil with that respect, not just for the crop that we're getting out of it, but because I want hundreds of crops to come out of it in the years to come. So.
That's great. That's also amazing that it's been under APR since the 70s.
Yeah, it's a really old APR contract, which has its downsides, but but is in the end very good, because seeing some of the farmland in this area, you know, go into development just breaks my heart.
Yeah, and what a gift that you both are there now. And you know, as you said, I mean, I think you put it really beautifully that these beds you hope will produce food for generations to come. I mean, that's sort of the premise of preserving farmland for farming, right? Is that it ensures that it doesn't get developed and it also can feed the local community,
which I think is the space that we're on, I always called it the town farm, and because its older history before my family owned it was that it was owned by the town of Adams, and there was like a home there where folks who were like, you know, this is in the like mid 19th century, so like older folks or women who lost their husbands often would live in this one big house, basically on the spot where we're farming now, and they had garden plots and things there, and it was called the town farm because it was like a place where people could live and farm who didn't have access to even housing outside of that. So the interesting history.
Yeah, what a compelling story also to sort of like be bringing back the land in that way. It's sort of coming full circle.
Huh. Yeah, it feels that way.
That's really cool. I'd love to hear a little bit more about your CSA, especially because, you know, in the last couple of years, one of the trends that I've noticed in the agricultural sector, at least in Western Massachusetts, is that farms have really been transitioning to a farm stand or a farm store model, as opposed to going to markets or doing a CSA. And I think that, you know, just from other farmers that I've spoken to in the past few years, there has been a decline in CSA shareholder membership. But obviously with the pandemic, there has been a huge surge. an increase, at least in our region. But I'm also interested in the fact that you chose that as a model for getting your food to folks, because, you know, like I said, it just hasn't been one that has been used a lot. And then, so on the one hand, my question is asking, you know, why did you choose the CSA model? But the second is, especially given what's going on now with the pandemic, what has your experience been with the CSA, and have you seen an increase in how many shares were purchased this year? Just speak a little bit about that experience.
Sure. So we launched a CSA this year. So in our first season last year, we sold primarily at the North Adams Farmers Market. Mm-hmm. We just wanted to like get to know the community and see if we thought a CSA was going to be feasible. And also we wanted to farm on the land for a season and feel that we could get like a good diverse array of vegetables to offer for the CSA before we launched it. So this is actually the first year we offered it, and it seems fortuitous, aligned with COVID in a weird way, because people are looking for local food where you can feel comfortable about the safety practices. And that's part of what we like about the CSA anyway, is that people can know their farmer, they can come to the farm, see what we do, see how we grow. And then just the extra layer of food security needs right now made it maybe a good year to have started a CSA. And yeah, in speaking to what you're saying about farms seeing a decline in CSAs, I was wondering how it would go, because after having farmed in the Pioneer Valley, where there's a lot of amazing farms and CSAs, I wasn't sure how saturated of a market it is. And we offer a box share CSA. So the idea is that it would be... it's easy to pick up in other locations. So like if you can't get to the farm every week to pick up, or, you know, kind of planning for the future, it's also more convenient for us to do the box CSA, because we can plan exactly what's going to be in it when we're doing our crop planning in the winter. And when we harvest, we can harvest exactly what we want for the box each week, as opposed to if you have kind of the array where people can get, a bunch of kale or a bunch of chard and options. So to keep it kind of practical for the size farm we are, we did a box option, which has been good, especially with like, for example, the Berkshire Grown programs, that the one with Community Health Partnership, that's convenient to be a box share because it gets delivered and is just easier for people to access that way.
Yeah, I think the CSA model allows us a little bit more control over around access, and whether that's like being able to do, you know, cost saving things with people, being flexible around, you know, payment plans. We're working on getting SNAP, and all of those things are often available at farmers markets, but I think it just, the model of the CSA is so in our control that it, you know, it makes it easier to feel like we can help the box share be accessible to a lot of people. And I think the delivery model, in that same token, like a lot of farms are in more rural parts of towns. And if transportation is an issue, which it often is, in the Berkshires especially, where we have not a robust public transportation system, getting to even our farm could be difficult for people who, you know, don't have access to a vehicle. So the box share allows us to bring it to a downtown location, and we try to build community and make the land accessible to folks outside of that by hosting farm tours. And obviously this is all a little bit shakier this year, but we're hoping eventually to host community events so that people do feel like they're welcome on the land itself. But we feel like the box share is a great way to make sure that folks who want access to the food, we're just like trying to remove as many barriers as we can to, you know, getting access.
I really love like how you're thinking about the farm as a site for community engagement, because you know, it's not just, I mean, it is the place where food is being cultivated and we're getting food, but it's also so much more. I mean, it's entrenched in place, identity, community. And so I think it's really an interesting model and something I often encourage farmers to think about, like you mentioned the farm tour or just like different points of engagement for people to become more familiar with the people growing their food, with the land that's growing their food, having access to that, understanding those stories, I think is really, you know, from a more practical standpoint, especially since this podcast is meant for other farmers to learn from, I think from a practical standpoint, it's an important, for lack of a better term, marketing tool, because it's really, connecting people to where their food is grown and ensuring that the folks who are buying your food continue to buy food from you because they have this important connection. Is that something that you, I mean, you mentioned a little bit that you're interested in doing some of those things. Is that something that you always thought from the get-go that you wanted to incorporate with your farming?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's great. For fun, what's in the CSA share this week?
Ooh, let's see. Off the top of my head, we've got our summer squash coming in, basil, red flatleaf mustard greens. We have a lettuce mix, nice big green leaf lettuce. Radishes. Our carrots are coming in next week. They were almost ready.
But. Mm-hmm. First round of carrots ever, because without water last year, we didn't attempt them. And then the flower, we also do a flower share. We had a spring flower share and a summer flower share. And this week's bouquets include our first sunflowers and snapdragons from the fields, and then some really gorgeous, like perennials, yarrow and mountain mint, and this really cute one that the bees love called Bee's Friend. That's like a lavender color. Yeah.
So the flower share is actually something I'd love to hear more about. You know, flower farms are also becoming a little bit more popular, which is really sweet to see. And I'm curious, you know, what the reasoning was behind offering a flower share and just how it's going for you.
Well, coming into planning the business like 2 years ago, I felt really inspired to grow flowers. I think I saw, you know, some farms out in the Pioneer Valley that were doing that. And that I think you can grow, I mean, we can grow a lot of vegetables and a lot of flowers on a small amount of space. But I was just saw that people were making it work. And that there seemed to be a market for it in a way that I didn't see happening in the Berkshires yet. So that was, and I think they're just beautiful to grow. So last year was kind of a let's see how it goes, and then we got such a great response at market to them. We grew flowers for a friend of mine's wedding in the spring, which was really powerful to me. Like both, I went to elementary school with both her and her husband, who's both grew up in Adams, and I got to grow flowers for their wedding in Adams. So I just love, you know, the Berkshires has a big events market, and like there's lots of people who come here from out of town to celebrate things and to see the scenery and celebrate the arts. But so being able to, you know, incorporate some things that are actually grown on Berkshire soil and contribute to like investing in Berkshire soil at these functions feels really important. And the CSA model, kind of just for the same reasons as we like the vegetable CSA, it just feels like a nice way to, you know, get flowers on people's tables while also encouraging them to have a relationship with us. And I think a lot of people leave flowers out of the conversation when they're talking about like local products, like local food and you know, climate impact and pesticides and all of those things are true for flowers too. Like most flowers that you get in a grocery store or at a florist come from halfway around the world, have been harvested like a month ago and are covered in pesticides. So I think we're offering a very different product, and that, you know, as people continue to wake up to the impacts of purchasing those products, they, you know, even though you don't eat flowers, the environmental impacts are all the same. So I think people are starting to take that into consideration, and they want a product that's grown better.
And I'd like to add to that, that from a business side of it, I was more like, yeah, flowers are cool, but I'm excited to grow vegetables because you can eat it. But flowers have a lot of value per bed. And so I kind of thought of it as a way to sort of like help almost like subsidize the other crops that we want to grow and offer that aren't as valuable. So I mean, when we plan the vegetables in general, we do leave out crops like potatoes and pumpkins and things that we just wouldn't get the enough value per bed. So I sort of saw the flowers as like a way to offset items like that. And it's worked out well.
Yeah.
I think you bring up a good point, because you're really talking about having two different revenue streams here between the flowers and the veggie CSA. But then, you know, as you said, you're also subsidizing from the flowers just because you're getting more. Of course, now I just lost my train of thought. Oh, there we go. Yeah. So what I was just thinking is, can you speak a little bit about your business planning, just especially as like, you know, beginning farmers in the second season, if you were to talk to two other folks who wanted to farm on a half acre, what would be the business planning advice you would offer them?
So we, right at the beginning of our first season, we got some really great advice from Jen Salinetti at Woven Roots down in Lee. She came to the farm and I took a NOFA class with her and Pete, and learned a lot from them. And her advice to us was to start small. So I think that felt like really good business advice going into the first year, because it, and also we weren't financially dependent on the farm last year. Both Laura and I continue to work part-time jobs, but especially last year worked even more part-time off farm. And it just felt like good advice, because we were able to start investing in the business without the, you know, huge burden of paying our bills at home from the farm in our very first year. And depending on the space you're looking at, like we were literally looking at like an untouched hay field. So the idea of, you know, starting with that in March and imagining paying rent by June is terrifying. So that would be like, I really took that advice to heart, and I really felt like it helped our first year just feel like more of a success. You know, every time it was like, oh, this is just, we can just celebrate the successes that we're having, and we don't have to be so worried about the failures, because there are always going to be failures. And, you know, the more pressure you can take off of that in the first year, the better. And then also this winter, we took a really great business class through the Carrot Project out in Boston, and we took it in Northampton. That was like a farm business planning class, and that was exceptional, and we highly recommend that course. But just taking a business course in general, especially with folks who know about farming, because there are a lot of weird niche farm business things around like QuickBooks and keeping your books. And so the Carrot Project was great because they have people who have been doing books for farms and people who have even farmed themselves and are now giving financial advice. So yeah, definitely recommend taking one of those courses, because that really helped us to better set up our like financial record keeping going into our second season.
That's great advice. And it's great that you're, you know, you looked to different resources via, whether it be farmer mentorship, as you mentioned with Jen Salonetti, or like looking for business planning courses. I think that's always, those are always such great ways for new farmers to sort of learn from the experience of others when they're figuring out how to navigate these new systems, especially I think in farming. You know, there's the one thing I've noticed is that farmers, they have most of the practical know-how, right, of what they're going to do, and they have this passion for growing things. But then there's this whole other aspect to farming, which is the business and the marketing. And I think that that can be a real challenge, especially if someone doesn't have a background in that. And so that actually brings me to like the last thing I really wanted to talk about, which is, you know, how you're advertising your CSA. Like, what are the things that you're thinking about as, you know, you're trying to balance farming the land and growing food, but at the same time, you're also needing to get the word out there that you have a CSA, that you have a flower share. What is your number one go-to in terms of getting advertising, I guess, and marketing your product?
Yeah, so our biggest marketing tool has been social media and our website. I sort of have a background in communications and social media, and so that has been like, going into it, I just, you know, we knew that that was going to be an important part of helping people to get to know us better. And it served us really well. Like, we didn't really have to invest in other marketing strategies thus far. We do some personal, like meetings and stuff to get to know wholesalers where, you know, over the winter time, we went out and we're introducing ourselves to different restaurants and store owners, but really the social media, you know, having a robust social media where you can show people how you grow and show people your products and, you know, get to know us personally, like our personalities on there. I think it just feels so, like such an inside scoop on what's happening on the farm, and that has really been like the best way to convince people.
Yeah, I think you bring up such a good point. So social media is like one of the things that I cannot recommend enough to farmers when they're trying to diversify their revenue streams or trying to hit new markets. I'm always like, well, what's the Facebook and Instagram profile looking like? And I think that, you know, it's an easy direct consumer tool to use. And also, you know, you mentioned, and I like this, how you said, you know, it gives a chance for people to see our personalities. It reminds me of the conversation I had with Abby Furla in our second podcast, who's from Foxtrot Farm in Ashfield, Massachusetts. So a little bit further east and north of here. But where she was saying that she noticed that the pictures that get the most likes are the ones that have her face in them, which makes total sense, because I think, you know, people love to connect with, they want to know who is it? Who's the person behind this? Do you find a similar thing that like the more personal you make your social media posts, the more engaged your audience is?
Oh, that's definitely true. Mm-hmm. The faces are 100% the things that do the best, including Jackie's face, who is the farm dog, Laura's dog. Her face does pretty well on there. But people love getting to know us. I just posted this like goofy video of me batting Larkspur eyelashes recently, and that was really great. So yeah, it's definitely like, and that is marketing, right? Like in that I wasn't selling anything in that post, but it gets people engaged. It reminds people that we grow flowers, so maybe they think of us next time. I think that kind of storytelling is something that we put on our website as well, like sharing the history of the farm, why our practices matter to us, you know, just kind of creating a narrative, which, I mean, the narrative exists, like we are here because we love it. But sharing that with people helps people to connect.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I did say that was my last question, but I do have one more.
Yeah.
Of course. You know, we're going through this intense drought right now in Western Mass. How are you both doing with that?
Well, we're just irrigating and it's amazing. I don't even know how we did it last year without it, honestly.
I think the irrigating in the way we are, which is that we have a small space, we use drip irrigation on no-till permanent beds. So a little bit of irrigation goes a long way for our beds, but also, you know, all of the farms I've ever worked on, it was kind of like irrigate when it's an emergency. Or, you know, you irrigate when it's a drought, but you're not set up to irrigate all the time. And we are set up to irrigate all the time. And I think that's really going to make a difference in terms of volume out of each bed. And if you're working on a size similar to us, those efficiencies really make a difference. And our goal in the next, 5 years is to just keep making every inch of bed space as efficient as possible. So if you have access to that kind of irrigating, the method of like irrigating everything once a week, you know, the inch of rain that it wants or the inch of irrigation that it wants, that's new for me. Like the farming I've always done was like, oh, it's fine, until it's like desperate and then you kind of save it. But this kind of irrigation, I think, is going to make a big difference for a farm our size.
Yeah. And also because of the way that we farm, we do a lot of mulching, whether it's with organic matter or landscape fabric. We use on some of the newer beds that still have perennial weed pressure. And the mulching goes a long way for the water conservation as well.
I said that was going to be my last question and now launched this whole like discussion in my own head, but it's something I've been thinking about a lot recently, especially as like our smaller, the farms out here, they're not big farms, generally speaking. I mean, the acreage is not a lot, right? And I think that these small farms have really been taxed with the demand for local food given the pandemic. And small-scale agriculture is something that's becoming more and more prominent. And do you see, you are small-scale, you're operating on a small scale, producing food. Do you think that's the way to go in the future? Or are you looking to really expand your acreage as you move along?
The small-scale has been our long-term plan from the beginning, 2 years ago. It still is our plan. We will grow beyond half of an acre, but to keep it, to use the practices that we want to use, we have a long ways that we can still go in terms of maximizing what we get out of each bed. We do 2 to 3 successions on most of the beds per year. But still with interplanting, we're really trying to push ourselves to maximize production on the amount of space we're using. And even if we grow to, 2 acres of land and production or something, it'll still be more about maximizing the space we have and not expanding.
Well, listen, I want to thank you both so much, Laura and Meg, for having this conversation with me. It was a real pleasure getting to know more about you and your farm.
Yeah, thank you, Andrea.
Yeah, this was great.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. I absolutely love doing these podcasts. My phone's ringing. Okay. Everyone's going to hear that on the podcast. All right. Well, thank you both again. I really appreciate it. And can you just tell folks what your, I will have a link to your website, but your website, I'm assuming, is just fullwellfarm.com, correct?
Yep.
Great. Yeah. Everyone should check it out. I think these two women are doing some really great stuff out here in the Berkshires. And good luck with the rest of the growing season.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.